It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Saudi airstrikes target advancing Shia Houthi rebels in southern Yemen. The Saudi ambassador to Washington says his country has launched airstrikes aimed at Shia Houthi rebels in Yemen. He said the Saudis consulted with the U.S. before launching those strikes. The whereabouts of President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi remain unknown after rebel warplanes attacked the presidential complex in the southern city Aden Wednesday. Forces loyal to the Houthis captured the international airport in Aden Wednesday. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
The international community has spoken clearly through UN Security Council resolutions and in other fora that the violent takeover of Yemen by an armed faction is unacceptable, and that the only legitimate transition can be accomplished through political negotiations and a consensus agreement among all of the parties based on the GCC initiative and national dialogue outcomes.
U.S. officials cannot confirm reports Mr. Hadi has fled the country. Nigerian officials say the country's land and sea borders will be closed from now until Saturday's national election to ensure security. The vote already postponed to March 28 from February 14. Over security concerns in the northeast is a crucial ballot as the nation combats an Islamist insurgency. Authorities have already announced a total restriction on movement during Saturday's polling hours. Christopher Fomunyo of the National Democratic Institute and an election observer says his group has been assured police, not troops, will guard the polling stations.
That will be the norm because we've seen the police very active in previous elections without the presence of the military, and there's no reason to expect that in 2015 the military would be called upon to be present in polling sites and polling stations.
President Goodluck Jonathan faces a primary challenge from Muhammadu Buhari. This is VOA News. The U.S.-led coalition has begun launching airstrikes on Islamic State targets in the strategically important Iraqi city of Tikrit. Iraq asked the U.S. for the air support as it struggles to retake the city from militants. RAND Corporation security analyst Colin Clark was asked if this is a change in U.S. strategy.
I don't know if it's a significant change in the U.S. strategy in Iraq. It's certainly a change in the more recent offensive in Tikrit, which has been ongoing for the past 3 weeks and has seemed to have stalled out more recently.
Coalition Commanding General James Terry says the strikes are intended to destroy IS strongholds with precision, saving innocent Iraqi lives while minimizing collateral damage to the infrastructure. Iran has trained and armed Shia militia who have been fighting alongside Iraqi forces against Islamic State in Tikrit, but U.S. officials have stressed the U.S. is not coordinating with Tehran. The U.S. military Wednesday filed charges of desertion against a soldier who left his post in Afghanistan and was held by insurgents for 5 years, even though a year ago President Obama traded 5 Taliban militants for his safe return. Sergeant Bo Bergdahl is also charged with misbehavior before the enemy. Colonel Daniel King is an Army spokesman.
The U.S. Army Forces Command has thoroughly reviewed the Army's investigation surrounding Sergeant Robert Beaudry Bergdahl's 2009 disappearance in Afghanistan and formally charged Sergeant Bergdahl under the Armed Forces Uniform Code of Military Justice on March 25, 2015, with desertion, with intent to shirk important or hazardous duty, and misbehavior before the enemy by endangering the safety of a command, unit, or place, and has referred the case to an Article 32 preliminary hearing.
If convicted in a court-martial, Bergdahl could conceivably face life in prison. The U.S. says it has information of possible terror threats to locations frequented by Westerners in Uganda's capital, Kampala, and warned an attack could take place soon. The embassy issued similar threats last year. Uganda contributes forces to the African Union campaign in Somalia against militant al-Shabaab fighters. An international court has denied a request from former Liberian President Charles Taylor to serve the rest of his 50-year prison sentence in Rwanda. The special court for Sierra Leone ruled Wednesday no reasons why Taylor should not serve out his prison term in Britain's Franklin prison. In Libya, Islamic State fighters claimed involvement in suicide attacks, one in Sirte, the other in Benghazi, targeting forces loyal to the country's two rival governments. Reports say 12 people were killed in bombings in Libya's second-largest city, Benghazi. 5 others died in attacks in the coastal city, Sirte. The UN human rights official in Libya says outside pressure must be brought to bear on rival governments to choke off weapons. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian officials announced new security measures ahead of Saturday's election.
As you know, Boko Haram has been carrying out cross-border attacks as well as suicide bombings. Perhaps to forestall this, the security has shut land and sea borders, which begins today, Thursday.
That's VOA's Peter Clotte, who is in Nigeria to cover Saturday's presidential election. Liberian health officials say the country's new Ebola patient is responding to treatment. Human rights defenders in Libya are under attack, and Sierra Leone again delays the reopening of schools shut 7 months ago because of Ebola.
The purpose for the reopening is not just for educational purposes, but also to ensure that our students go to a safe environment whereby they will not have any psychological fear that they might be contracting the Ebola virus.
Abdoulaye Birete is Sierra Leone's government spokesman. Kenya sets up separation barriers along its borders to keep away Al-Shabaab attackers. And South Africa suspends police officers for rendition of Zimbabweans. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military says it will violently crack down on any election-related unrest. Army Chief Lieutenant General Kenneth Minima told a news conference Wednesday that the Army and police had made adequate security arrangements for Saturday's poll. He did not elaborate. General Minima appealed to politicians and their followers to ensure a violent-free election. This comes as security has been tightened nationwide ahead of the vote. VOA's Peter Clotte, who is in Nigeria covering the election, joins us now live. Good morning to you, Peter.
Good morning, James.
Thank you very much for joining us from Nigeria. General Minima seems to be sending a message to the two major parties and their supporters to keep the peace on Election Day. Has there been any election-related violence that you have noticed since you arrived in the country?
Well, I'm yet to witness any act of violence, James. However, there has been reported violence in River State and parts of Lagos. The violence is not widespread. In the past, there has been violence in Nigeria's election that has marred and undermined the credibility of the election. About 1,000 people were killed during the 2011 presidential election, among other issues. So people are scared that election, this year's competitive nature would increase the violence level. But it remains to be seen if this will happen.
Of course, Peter, in the back of everyone's mind is the threat of Boko Haram, which has vowed to disrupt these elections. What security measures have been put in place to kind of mitigate any attacks from Boko Haram?
Well, security has been tightened, especially in the principal streets of most of the state. In Lagos, as I went round early last night, cars were being checked by the state security organizations, including the police, to make sure that nobody is carrying any weapons for that matter. And as you know, Boko Haram has been carrying out cross-border attacks as well as suicide bombings. Perhaps to forestall this, the security has shut land and sea borders, which begins today, Thursday. The Nigerian Security Police also on Wednesday advised citizens to watch for people wearing loose and bulky clothing, which are inappropriate for the hot weather at this time. Also to look out for unattended bags, luggage, and the Department of State Services has also warned that cars, motorcycles, and three-wheel motorized taxis should be parked away from polling stations and for markets and shops to shut down on Elections Day. And the immigration services have also been encouraged to ensure that non-Nigerians do not vote in this year's election. But INEC says that it has implemented issues such as the card reader, which will prevent non-Nigerians who don't have the permanent voter cards from voting, James.
So, Peter, what's on the agenda for today? As you mentioned already, the security services are expected to announce some measures to prevent any violence for the Saturday's election. Anything else you can tell us?
Well, today, Thursday, the main opposition, All Progressive Congress, would hold a news conference in the capital, Abuja, to highlight some of their concerns ahead of the election, as well as reassure their supporters of their imminent victory in the presidential election this Saturday.
Peter Clotty, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome, James, and have a good day.
That's VOA's Peter Clotty in Nigeria to cover Saturday's presidential election. Sierra Leone authorities have delayed yet again the reopening of schools shut down since last year following the Ebola outbreak. Schools throughout the country were set to reopen on March 30th. Now they will reopen on April 14th. Spokesman Abdullahi Berete says the government wants to make sure all safety measures are put in place before the reopening.
When the president made a pronouncement that schools were going to reopen on the 30th of this month, it was based on the expert advice given by the technical committee so formed in the Ministry of Education, Science and Technology, as well as from members of the National Ebola Response Team, in terms of making sure that every school that was used as a holding center, every school that was used as a treatment center, must be fumigated, points that every school must be equipped with toilet facilities, every school must have adequate water supply, etc. Because the purpose of the reopening is not just for educational purposes, but also to ensure that our students go to a safe environment whereby they will not have any psychological fear that they might be contracting the Ebola virus.
Abdullahi, could it be that perhaps the government was not ready in delivering to these schools all the materials needed for these schools to be ready to reopen?
Well, that was one of the reasons cited. The reason being, we already had working very closely with the Conference of Principals as well as the Council of Head Teachers and also the National Union of Sierra Leonean Students. But above that, there is a technical committee, and the president even appointed a coordinator that is serving as a liaison person between the Ministry of Education as well as all the relevant stakeholders, including our development partners in the educational sector. So once they advised us that they are not that far yet ready, that is why government said, well, for us, we don't just want to hastily open schools. We want to make sure we open schools when everybody is on the same page with the learning environment, which is very crucial because we want to make sure we have isolation units. We have already, as a government, imported over 57,000 infrared thermometers so that we can give them to all the schools in this country and also to train teachers and make sure we have nurses on standby.
Your government has announced another Ebola lockdown, and I'm sure this is going to take place in some parts of Freetown. Is that correct?
It is going to be nationwide, but we have areas we call the hotspot, and this includes, as you rightly said, the western area that included Freetown. We are also concentrating more in Potloko, Bombali, and Cambia district in the north, because these are areas, even though, like for today, we are enjoying the status of only recording a one case for the rest of the country, yet still, we are making sure that we do it simultaneously in all the districts across the country.
Sierra Leone's government spokesman, Abdullahi Berete, was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Liberian Health Ministry officials say a woman who became the country's first Ebola patient in more than a month has been quarantined, stabilized, and responding to supportive treatment. Local media reports say the woman, identified as Ruth Tugba, was in contact with many people, including two densely populated schools where she used to sell cooked food to both the students and teachers. One local media report said the woman might have been infected through having sexual intercourse, presumably with her boyfriend, who is an Ebola survivor. Tolbin Yasua, the Assistant Minister of Health for Preventive Services, says authorities are following up on all of the woman's previous contacts.
The lady from Monrovia Sector 2, the Kawe area, she's been confirmed of the Ebola virus disease, and right now she's in the Monrovia Medical Unit, which is operated jointly by the Ministry of Health and the U.S. Public Health Service. She's stabilized and responding to supportive treatment. but our medical healthcare workers.
We understand she came in contact with a lot of people, including some schools.
There are primary contacts and secondary contacts, and all of those contacts have been traced. There are some people that we've already ruled out because of the fact that they were not close contact to her, and this is being done.
Does the Ministry of Health know how this woman got infected?
We are still investigating how she got infected. Our preliminary investigation shows that she has not, according to her, gone into Sierra Leone or Guinea, where there is active transmission taking place in out of any of the districts or prefectures in Guinea or Sierra Leone. So our concern is to investigate what are the possibilities of where the woman could have been infected.
There's a report that says that she probably was infected through sexual intercourse by her boyfriend, who is an Ebola survivor. If that is the case, what does that say about people who survived the disease?
We are investigating how this might have happened. We can't leave any stone unturned yet. Everything is being investigated. So whether or not it came for a survivor, we are investigating. Once we get the facts, we are going to put it out there.
The last time I spoke with you, Liberia was looking forward to the day that it will be declared Ebola free. Are you disappointed?
We were set for April 13th for the day that Liberia would have been Ebola free based on the World Health Organization protocol. But we are now recounting based on this confirmed case on March 20th. This is the nature of an outbreak that we are dealing with. We knew that we were not off the hook yet, but this is challenging us to do more. It's good that it came out because we informed the Liberian people to be very much vigilant and do away with complacency. And so we are not disappointed. We are tracing all of the contacts, and we are in good spirit to deal with the border crossings here in our borders.
Talbin Yeswa is Liberia's Assistant Minister of Health for Preventive Services. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 26. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. A new United Nations report finds that human rights defenders in Libya seeking to shed light on widespread violations and abuses across the country are subject to violent attacks and threats. The joint report by the UN Support Mission in Libya and the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva presents a very bleak picture of fragmented, ungovernable society. Lisa Schlein reports.
UN officials warn Libya is falling apart as fighting between two competing governments, as well as among a number of splinter groups, continues unabated. Added to this destructive mix, they say, is the increasingly dangerous presence and threatening activities in the country of the Islamic State group known also as ISIS or ISIL. The report notes humanitarian emergencies are growing and the human rights situation is severely deteriorating, with human rights defenders at particular risk. It says they are subject to attacks, including killings, abductions, torture, and other ill treatment. Director of Human Rights in Libya, Claudio Codone, says there was no civil society and no freedom of expression in Libya under Muammar Gaddafi. He does, however, say Libya today is at its most repressive since the revolution ousted and killed the former dictator. He says Libya's two rival camps are composed of a number of militias who do not tolerate any dissent. For example, he notes the Libyan National Human Rights Institution, which just started, has been shut down.
Similarly, a few of the other NGOs, their members being arrested, and then you have people being killed. You have lots of individuals. Some work specific in human rights, but many are social activists. You know, they have their own political views and so on, and they get threats by SMS or Facebook. So many have left the country, and others have been basically been silenced.
The report says civilians, including human rights defenders, have neither protection nor recourse to justice in Libya. Cordoni says it is important that the United Nations pursue a peace process, although he adds he is not very optimistic about the results. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Al-Shabaab militant group has been carrying out relentless attacks in Kenya, killing dozens of people in the northeast and coastal regions. Now, some Kenyan officials have told local media about a proposal to build a separation barrier along the country's border with Somalia to stop Al-Shabaab attacks. So far, the Somali government said it only heard of the so-called separation barrier through media reports. Mohamed Ali Americo is Somalia's ambassador to Kenya.
First of all, we had those statements in the media. As an embassy and the Somali government was in Kenya, we haven't seen official document from Kenya government. And Kenya is a sovereign country. They can do anything within their territory. We are waiting for official from Kenya government.
The issue of the separation barrier was proposed by a number of officials by the Kenyan government, including the governor of Lamu County, Isa Timame, and he's proposing a separation barrier between Mandera and Bulahawo, Somalia. What's your reaction?
The border between Somalia and Kenya is very long. I believe it's close to 700 kilometers, and it's very long. And as you are aware of Kenya forces, they are part of AMISOM forces, which are helping the Somali National Army in defeating Shabaab, and they have helped us. The issue of Shabaab doing attacks in Kenya, we condemn them as Somali government, and we are not happy about that. And the two governments have a good bilateral relationship, diplomatic relationship, and the two governments are dealing with that, talking how to stop that. But as a government, we condemn those attacks by Shabaab in Kenya.
Do you think separation barrier will help stop attacks against Kenya by Al-Shabaab?
This proposed statement that you have mentioned that we have seen in the media, as a government, we are going to respond when we hear officially from the Kenyan government. Otherwise, it will be a hypothetical question and a hypothetical answer.
How would you propose that Kenya and Somalia, in particular, since they share this border, and Al-Shabaab is benefiting from the porous, long border between the two countries. How do you propose the two countries cooperate on security issues along the border?
The proposal, I think, is that to continue the good relationship, sharing information that we are doing now between the two governments, and this continued relationship should continue. And I believe this will help in defeating Shabaab, among other things, which it's security matter, and I cannot say much in the media now.
Mohamed Ali Americo, Somalia's ambassador to Kenya. He spoke with Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Another high-ranking South African police official has been suspended over the illegal rendition of Zimbabweans in 2010, bringing to three suspensions over the issue so far. Some of the Zimbabweans who were illegally handed over to Zimbabwean authorities were allegedly killed by the Zimbabwean police. As Benedict Schlapo reports from Johannesburg, the new South African police minister says he wants every officer who was involved to face the full might of the law.
Police Minister Nkosinathi Nhleko is leaving no stone unturned in his bid to bring to book all those involved in the illegal renditions of Zimbabweans in November 2010. In this case of rendition, which is illegal here, South African police kidnapped and illegally transferred the Zimbabweans to the Zimbabwean police authorities. Now heads have started to roll as the long arm of the law searches for those who facilitated the renditions. The first two top law enforcement officers to be suspended were Anwar Dramat, national head of the Hawks, and Lieutenant General Shadrack Sibiya, head of the Hawks in Gauteng, both for allegedly facilitating the renditions. And now the head of Independent Police Investigative Directorate, Robert McBride, has been suspended also in connection with the rendition saga. Police Minister Nhleko says it is time for those involved to account for their actions.
We need to know what happened, how it happened, and why. Because all of the allegations that are contained therein are allegations in a sense that are committed in the name of South Africans.
Zimbabwean freelance journalist Mxolisi Ncube, who claims he's living in fear after being accused in the Zimbabwean state media of being Babajukwa, says investigations into the renditions will restore foreigners' confidence in the South African police.
We need to see these people being punished if they are found guilty. They have to face the music. They have to be taken to the court of law. They have to be tried for whatever they did. And according to me, considering that two of the people that were renditioned died in the process.
Another Zimbabwean national, Mlungisi Tshabalala, says by investigating these illegal actions of the police, South Africa is setting a good example for the African continent. Up to 15 politically outspoken Zimbabweans seeking refuge in South Africa have reportedly disappeared without a trace, and activists believe they are also victims of the renditions. Reporting in Johannesburg, this is Benedict Nhlapo.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Defending champions Nigeria Tigers beat visitors Burkina Faso 63-50 in the return leg of their 2015 All-Africa Games qualifier in Lagos on Wednesday night. Earlier on, Tigers also prevailed over Burkina Faso 83-57 in the opening leg in Ouagadougou a fortnight ago. Tigers coach Sani Ahmed says besides retaining their All-Africa Games crown, they are now plotting how to get past African champions Angola at the Africa Basketball Championships in Tunisia in August, so as to qualify for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics.
The organizers have done very well. The competition level is still high also. It's an experience for my team because about 11 of the players are playing in Nigeria. Most of them have not gone for international competition. So at least this is an experience for them to play outside.
You've had an All-Africa Games outing in Ouagadougou, qualifiers. You're the defending champions. And you've come for this tournament. How does it augur for your match return leg against Burkina Faso in Lagos?
I think winning this championship will give us as a morale booster. And the guys will come all out. Being that we have gone to Ouagadougou and we won, so definitely we'll come all out at home and try to win.
That was Sani Ahmed, Nigeria Tigers basketball coach, speaking in Lagos, Nigeria. Turning to football, an 81st-minute goal by Farouk Mia lifted Uganda Cranes to a sensational 1-0 victory against their hosts and Nigeria Super Eagles in Uyo Akwa Ibom State, South Nigeria, on Wednesday. Elsewhere, Botswana beat Lesotho 2-0, Burundi and Mauritius drew 2-1. Cameroon pipped hosts Indonesia 1-0, South Africa outplayed Swaziland 3-1, and Gabon edged Mali 4-3. Meanwhile, African champions Ivory Coast host Angola in Abidjan today, Thursday. Qatar play visiting Algeria in Doha, while Egypt is at home to Equatorial Guinea in Cairo. Finally, African champions Nigeria Flying Eagles are drawn in Group E with Brazil, North Korea and Hungary for the FIFA Under-20 World Cup in New Zealand. According to the draws conducted in Zurich, Switzerland, Senegal will make their debut at the tournament in Group C, where they face Colombia, Portugal and Qatar. Mali is in Group D, which also features Mexico, Serbia and Uruguay, while Ghana encounter Argentina, Austria and Panama in Group B. The three-week tournament starts on the 30th of May. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United States envoy to South Sudan urged the warring factions to resume peace talks a day after the United Nations warned of imposing sanctions against anyone who threatens the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. That is it for this Thursday, March 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you a very good Thursday.
Nigeria heads to the polls March 28th for a landmark election. What happens there matters throughout Africa. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. VOA reporters are in Nigeria and surrounding countries covering the campaigns and the issues and counting down to the March 28th election and beyond. Special Nigeria Decides 2015 coverage is underway now. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
Join host Chaka Sali and VOA's Straight Talk Africa this Saturday at 1800 UTC for special coverage of Nigeria's elections. You will get on-the-ground reports from VOA's journalists in Nigeria, in-depth discussion, and expert analysis of the most important election issues. Join us for Straight Talk Africa special Nigeria Decides right here on Voice of America.